This episode brought to you by Healthier You.
Are you living the healthiest version of you? Hi, this is registered dietitian and Run Disney race announcer Carissa Galloway, and I'm excited to share some information about the course I created. It's called Healthier You. In my talking and working with runners, they're always asking about ways to improve their health, nutrition, and for weight loss. I took everything I've learned as a registered dietitian and made it into this easy-to-navigate 12-week course. You're getting meal plans, you're getting nutrition education, you're getting recipes, and you're getting live monthly Q&A sessions with me where you can ask your personalized questions. We've had over 200 Healthier You participants this year, and so many of them are sharing great stories of success with how simple it is to use the program and how it's made huge improvements in their energy and nutrition choices. I'd love for you to join Healthier You, and you can use the code Jeff, J-E-F-F, to save $175. You can go to GallowayCourse.com or find the link in the show notes and follow me on Instagram for more information at Carissa_G-Way.
Today on the You Can Do It with Jeff Galloway podcast, we have Jen Miller, who writes the weekly running newsletter for the New York Times and has authored a witty and brutally honest account of her lifelong relationship with running called Running, A Love Story.
Running sort of helped me find strength in myself in multiple ways to navigate the waters of life, I guess you would say.
You can do it.
Run it to stay.
Well, welcome, Jen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
So just a little bit on Jen. She's an award-winning freelance writer and author. She's a regular contributor to the New York Times and writes their running newsletter that's been a great source of inspiration and resource for some great personal interest stories out there. So thanks, Jen, for your contribution to the running world.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's nice to hear.
Well, Jen, it's just great to have you on and to chat about all things running and talk a little bit about your book as well.
Yeah, the book is Running, A Love Story, and it's really touching. It has bits of humor and bits of real life in it, and I highly recommend it, but we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But to get things started, Jen, what brought you into running?
Oh, well, I, like a lot of people, played sports in high school. I didn't run because I thought running was boring. You know, I used to say the thing, oh, I only run if chased, blah, 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 which people still say to me and now annoys me and I get why. But I went to college in Florida and I didn't want to play sports in college because it was hot. And also I was good, but not great. And I really just wanted to focus on school. And I got out of shape. And when I came back to New Jersey from Florida to go to graduate school, and then I became a freelance writer and realized that, you know, magazines and newspapers would pay me to write stories that interest me, even if I didn't want to work there full time. And I thought that was a pretty good setup because I could write about a lot of different things. I pitched a story to a magazine that I would train for a 5K and that I would use an online running coach, which was new then. This was, you know, I don't think I had Wi-Fi in my apartment at the time. And the hook was the newness of the online running coaching and that it would be funny because I hated running. And it turned out I didn't hate running. and that story never ran, which is, I tell that story in the book because I saved all the notes and all the drafts. So I was able to use that in the book. And it just sort of spun off from there. I went from the person who said, you know, 5K is enough. And then I ran a 10 miler and I said, oh, that's enough. And then I ran a half marathon and then I'm never going to run a marathon. And then, of course, I ran a marathon. And then I ran 10 more of them and more of them and then got into ultra running. And it just got out of control from there. And here we are.
Well, there are things that are bad when you get out of control and then a few good ones. And with ultras, it's a mixture, isn't it?
I did my first 24-hour race on New Year's Eve. And, yeah, that was a mixed bag.
Wow. Some continued brain fog after that one.
Oh my goodness, like 3 days. Yeah, but it was fine. It was weird, but it was fine.
So what kind of keeps you coming back to running and continuing to challenge yourself in running?
I don't know what I would do without it. It's just so much a part of the fabric of my life now. And not only because I write about it, obviously, you know, I did that 24-hour race because I wanted to, but of course, if your running writer is going to do that, you want her to write about it. So, you know, but it's not the column that keeps me running. It's just, gosh, I had a stress fracture a couple years ago and my, it felt like my, the schedule of my life fell apart. Like the structure just, I felt very floppy, like physically floppy, but also, you know, just the structure of my life was gone. But, you know, it's good for my body. It's good for my mind. It's good in the winter to go out in the middle of the day and run in the sunshine. And it's not so much fun as to run in the snow, but we still do it, right? Well, not in Florida, but sometimes. I was in Tampa when it snowed once. Everybody lost their mind.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah, but it's just part of my life now. I mean, I've been doing it for 15 years or more now, almost 15 years. I just can't imagine my life without it. I'm going to be that 90-year-old lining up who people write inspiring stories about. You know, that's fine with me.
And what do you find unique about runners?
That's an interesting question. I think generally, and I say generally, we are a very warm and welcoming group to anybody who wants to come out and run. And I have seen in my time running, and I'm sure you have too, that when the sport became much more popular in 2008, in the second running boom, I think it became a better sport because there were more people who came out to run who never thought that they would be accepted or able to run before, or that they were too slow or they were a jogger, not a runner. And I know that that's not the case across the board. I have definitely heard from people who don't think that everybody should run with them. This whole Boston Marathon virtual thing. But and even the pros, like I have not run into a pro who has not welcomed people who want to try the sport. And of course, maybe they're just hiding it from me, but they seem so welcoming to people who want to try it, no matter what they look like, who they are, their background, all that stuff.
And do you think, you know, obviously it forms this sense of community. Do you think it could be similarly found in another sport or through another community organization, or is there something special about running that provides this?
Well, I think it can be found in lots of sports, and it's, I think it's common across endurance sports, swimming, biking. It's just that running tends to be cheaper than those sports. I mean, it can be really expensive, but it doesn't have to be. I think there's a minimum financial investment in biking and swimming that isn't necessarily present in running. But I think it's also unique in that we are doing the same thing at the same time on the same course as the pros. Like I don't know where else that happens. Like, you know, it was that year that Des Linden won the Boston Marathon where the conditions were so bad that the amateurs, the quote unquote amateurs, the women in the non-pro field beat the pros. Like that happens in our sport. It just does. And it's also a sport when you, especially in the ultra running community, when you get to the really long races that women win outright, like outright win. So I think those two things are unique.
All of us who've been running for a while know that running will make us feel better than before we ran. And we know that we have a special empowerment that comes on after a run to face challenges, and also more energy. Even if we start running tired, that running turns on the brain circuits for the vitality circuit, the good attitude circuit, and the empowerment circuit in the brain, better than any other activity. So what you are identifying is very well documented now. Now, shifting gears a little bit, you do a lot of work in your writing with corporate type topics and corporate issues. How do you feel running can help somebody in the corporate world?
I know that there's been a lot of writing about mindfulness, especially lately, and that mindfulness and running has been a topic that the New York Times has covered, not by me. But I think that mindfulness practices, to me, resemble running because it's something that forces you to sort of shake your head and get out of like cycles. So before I was speaking to you, I was working on a story about sea urchins. sea urchins. I'm a freelance writer, so I write for a whole bunch of people, not the children urchins, sea urchins. And it's very easy for me. I didn't use my standing desk this morning because the light was weird in my kitchen, which is where I usually write. It's very easy for me to sit at my dining room table and get so involved in this writing about sea urchins and like looking for statistics on sea urchin markets and pricing and all that stuff, for me to sort of get really hunched over. And I know you can't see this on the podcast, but I'm doing it on the video. Hunched over, typing, and getting so like caught up in this sea urchin problem, right, that I get frustrated. And after I speak to you, I'm going to get changed to go on a run. It just sort of breaks that. So that I can come back after lunch in the afternoon and start on something else and finish the story and feel great and fresh. And I think in this time when a lot of people are working from home who never worked from home before, they're realizing that there is flexibility in their day to go out and run at lunch and then come back to work and be a better worker. I just think that it's something that when you get so caught up in not that sea urchins don't matter, but this story in 10 years, I'll probably forget about, right? But the practice of going out and being by myself and running and putting my body through the paces sort of makes the work less stressful, I guess.
I do wonder, coming back to quote unquote real life, when we go back to offices, or most people go back to offices, you know, will this idea of a little bit more flexibility or things that like running at lunch you implemented when you were at home, could that kind of transform the workday when people go back into regular work life?
It'll be interesting to see that. I've worked from home for 16 years, so I'm not going anywhere. But, you know, in quote unquote normal times, I go up to the New York Times 4 or 5 times a year. And they wanted me to do like a video, whatever. A couple years ago, I used to run in Central Park with some famous person. And it would be recorded on Facebook Live. And then I would come back to the office and I'm like, well, do you have showers? And they're like, no. I said, how do you not have showers here? Like, you're just a giant new building. I think that there are going to be changes that employees ask for when they go back to the office that don't just have to do with, can I work from home sometimes? Like, why wouldn't a big company like that not have showers for people who want to, especially if it's part of my job, I got to go out and get sweaty with Molly Huddle or whatever. Sorry, that sounds bad. If I'm going to go out and run with Molly Huddle for work and I come back, like, you don't want to sit next to me later. Like, oh, that's gross.
What are your current running goals?
That's a good question. So on New Year's Eve into New Year's Day, I did a 24-hour race. And that sort of wiped me out. It takes time to recover. You know, it was my first 24-hour race, and I didn't feel like I was in as great of shape as I would have liked to have been. And I know that, you know, I made the mistake of talking to professional ultra runners for advice. And like, well, of course you have to get to 100 miles. And I'm like, I don't think you understand my pace, folks. But I did about 45. And it took me a while to recover from that. And I feel like I'm still sort of working out from that, because it's, you know, it's 2 months later, I'm running I'm getting up to 30 miles a week. And I sort of had race plans, but also I have life plans now because I have fortunately been vaccinated now. So there are nephews to see. There's a mountain to hike in Tennessee. So I feel like I'm going to go see a friend who lives in Tennessee, and we're going to go to the Great Smoky Mountains. And I was trying to pick a weekend where there wasn't a race I wanted to do. I said, this is nonsense. Like, I'm going to go see my friend. Like, priorities here. So I'm just trying to run hopefully up to 30 miles a week. And hopefully there's a 50K I want to run in May in Philadelphia. We'll see if I get there or not. We'll see.
What has this last year been like for you from a running standpoint? Have you done?
Terrible. Terrible. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no problem. Have you done any virtual races?
I did the, I was supposed to run, this is actually upsetting. I was supposed to run the Philadelphia Trail Marathon in April of last year. It was the first time that the race organizer got a permit to put it on in Fairmount Park, which if you run any of the big races in Philadelphia, you run along the street in Fairmount Park, but it's actually like gorgeous, beautiful woods up there. And he never got a permit for Fairmount, and he finally got it. And we were all excited. And of course it got canceled. But we did, you could do it virtually. So I was going to go run it in Valley Forge, and just the way that the fall worked out, I ended up waking up at 4 o'clock one morning on Halloween weekend. It might've actually been Halloween, and running around my neighborhood, which is, you know, okay. It's kind of weird. Like, I'm out running a marathon by myself. Even though my longest training run ever had been 22 miles for anything. I also took up surfing this summer for my 40th birthday. My dad bought me a surfboard. And I would sometimes run in the morning and then eat breakfast and then go surf. And like, just, I'm awful. I'm terrible at it. I fall all the time. I try not to surf in the afternoon because that's when like the dudes come out, and I'm just like horrible. They're like, what is this old lady doing here? And I just didn't have to worry about a fall marathon. So I learned how to surf. And I don't know what this year is going to hold, but, you know, I think it was, I tried something I always wanted to try. It was really hard, and I'm terrible at it, and I love it. So, you know, that took some of my running time, and I'm totally fine with that. But I still did a virtual marathon in the fall.
So you've injected some cross training, and
I have spent all of my life in those waterways in New Jersey, and I've definitely, even boogie boarding or body surfing, had my face smashed into the sand. But I still have my teeth. So
that's good.
There any similarities between your surfing career and your running career?
I'm uncoordinated. It is so much harder than anything I've ever tried. Cause like running, I ran as a kid. Like, I know how to, the motion of running, the motion of surfing, of trying to pop, like people see like little kids do it, like, oh, look at that kid. Well, when you're a child, you're like flexible and, you know, have no fear. When you're 40, it's a little bit different. So I plan to go to surf school in the fall because I need help. I need help. Like, I've taken surf lessons with, you know, like one hour, 90 minute lessons, but to actually go to a surf school where that's all you're doing for like 4 days, I think will be very helpful. And on the West Coast where the waves aren't so tricky.
Good for you. You throughout your career have had some moments that have been up moments in running. Can you tell us about one or two of those?
I ran my first 50K on a looped course, the 5 mile looped course that, you know, you run 5 miles on this trail loop and then you could like sit in your chair and eat whatever you want. And they had this huge, it's called the Labor Pains because it's on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. And there's like a big barbecue. It's like a whole spread. It was great. And it was fun. And it was not stressful at all. Cause like they had masseurs there and like, okay, I'm going to run this loop 5-ish times. If you want to hit a milestone distance, it's like a 12-hour course. So you can run as far as you want in 12 hours. Or if you want to hit a marathon, milestone distance, like I ran the loops and then there was a sign, you had to run to the sign and back to get your 50K, which is great. And then I thought, well, I can probably do it better. And then I did on a course where it was just a 50K, you know, a big one circle. And it was in October of 2018, I think. And it was in October and it was hot. And I hate running in heat. And I was so angry about it being hot in October. And I know nothing you could do about hot weather. It doesn't mean you can't be angry. And I still beat my previous time by over an hour. Wow. And at first, I was mad because I knew if the weather had been better, I would have done better. But then I was like, wait a minute. And then a couple months later, I had a stress fracture. So maybe, you know, and I haven't gotten back there since, but, you know, injury and then pandemic, it's like, what are you going to do? But also last year, I ran a 5K at a nudist resort, which was a very different kind of experience. And I wore a sports bra because I don't hate myself. But that was sort of like, okay, I'm going to really put myself out there and just go do this very strange thing. And I did write about it. They did take photos. God bless the photographer. And the story was like one of the top stories in the summer with all the politics going on. It was still one of the most read stories that the New York Times had on a couple days. So that was exciting.
What did you come out of that experience with?
An appreciation for Body Glide. another one was running the New York City Marathon with my mother, which we did in 2019. My mother graduated high school the month that Title IX was enacted. And she was not allowed to run in high school because she was a girl. So to run the New York City Marathon with her, her first marathon, was a hell of an experience.
What year was that?
2019.
That's fabulous. Hopefully she's still running.
She's in a boot right now.
Oh, gosh.
She has inflamed tendons. She'll be fine, but she actually is wearing my boot for my stress fracture, so I was able to give her that.
Yes, you passed it on to her.
I did.
What's your favorite running related story, not about you, that you've covered or been a part of?
I wrote a profile of Bobby Gibb, who was Catherine Switzer, who I've written about before, and I said something nice for the reprint of her book Marathon Woman. She was the woman to first officially run the Boston Marathon because she registered under KB Switzer, which she said she just did. Like, it wasn't like a diversion thing or whatever. But Bobby Gibb actually ran the marathon the year before. She popped out of the bushes and ran. And it was something that I had not known, but I actually took the train up to Boston and spent the day with Bobby. And we had a great time, and I thought the story was just wonderful. And she's just a really interesting person who didn't stay in running. I mean, she was supposed to run on the anniversary of it, but she got an injury, and she's still really fast. But she's also like an artist and all sorts of other stuff. And I really loved writing that story. With the 2016 Olympic marathon trials, I also wrote a story about how the strength of women in American distance running, which I think is really played out, not just into that those Olympic marathon trials, but in the 5 years since, of just the incredible talent we have at the top of the field. Especially in the marathon. I mean, it's kind of upsetting what, you know, that the Olympics have been pushed off. But we'll see. I mean, the 2020 marathon trials were fantastic too. And I remember watching them with my mom at a bar. Our local running store owner also owns a bar. So they were showing it. And I said, I think this is all we're going to get this year. And I was right, unfortunately. Somebody asked me about running, you know, Chicago and then Boston. And I'm like, don't buy any flights. Like, it's a huge question mark as to how this is going to play out. So yeah. I'm hopeful, but pessimistic.
Yeah. Well, more and more races are being conducted, but they're smaller or very, very low, medium sized races. And that's a very good thing. But the real challenge are the crowds along the course.
Yeah.
And that's where the risk area is.
It's like when people, you know, just ask me what I think about, we'll just call them major, big city marathons, we'll just put it that way. And I have no inside knowledge about when anybody's planning. I'm not breaking any stories here. They talk about, well, you could spread the crowd out in it, the field size, this. I'm like, yeah, what about everybody who comes to watch?
Yep.
Any major marathon, you don't just think of the course, you think of everybody packed outside the course. And the thing with staggered starts, which will work in, like, my town did that in their Veterans Day race, you can't shut down a major American city for much longer than they already are for these races.
It's true.
You can't afford it. You can't, think about races, the amount of police costs are a huge part of the budget. It's just not feasible. And okay, you want to loop New York and Central Park. Okay, but you're still crowding everybody together and you're going to close Central Park to spectators? Like, it's a big problem. It's a big logistical problem.
Well, let's talk about your book and your love story with running and the book. It's really been really a popular book, and it is designed to expose others and bring them in to the joy of running. Tell us a little bit about it, the book.
Yeah, so I had been writing about running for the Philadelphia Inquirer Weekly before I went to the New York Times. And I had written for the Runner's World and the Guardian. And I just started writing these essays about my experiences with running, but also how it played in my life. And eventually I thought, oh, I should write a book. And I did. So the book starts at the starting, me getting dropped off at the starting line of the 2013 New Jersey Marathon, which was, I'd already written two books about New Jersey, and I said I wasn't going to write another New Jersey book. And I ended up writing another New Jersey book, not only because the main framework of the book is that New Jersey Marathon, but that New Jersey Marathon happened months after Sandy had just ripped apart the Jersey Shore. And that part of the Jersey Shore, especially because of the courses at the North Jersey Shore, which was most affected by all those pictures that you saw, roller coasters in the ocean, bridges wiped out. I mean, we ran past municipal buildings that weren't open. The course had to be changed because boardwalks were destroyed. Like, just anyway. And it was a couple weeks after the Boston Marathon bombing. So every chapter starts with a portion of the race of, you know, I'm moving through the marathon as then I jump back and move through the story of how I hated running and started getting into running, and then how running sort of like became part of my life to help me get over breakups and failed relationships and a failed engagement. And it's just the love story is, you know, more than one meaning, and just how running sort of helped me find strength in myself in multiple ways to navigate the waters of life, I guess you would say. And it's funny because I actually wrote the book in 2014 and I'm still talking about it because publishing takes timeline and it's been out for a little while, and is giving a talk to a running group in Kansas City before, you know, pre-COVID days. In 2019, I was on a cross-country road trip to California and stopped at this running group in Kansas City. And they said, well, I'm reading about you in the book and I'm listening to you talk right now, and it's like a totally different person. I'm like, that's time. And also the process, that's just time. The process of writing the book and examining these things that happened to me taught me lessons along the way too as a person. And I think I learned from that too.
Well, with everything that's been going on and still is going on, that's a book with a message that's needed today. So congratulations on a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. That's nice to hear.
So your Instagram, Jen A. Miller Runner, it's full of inspiration, but
my dog
primarily, yes, primarily features one thing. So can you tell us a little bit about your dog?
Yes. It normally is of my travels, but we're not really going anywhere. My dog, who's sleeping right now because she had a hard morning, her name is Annie Oakley Tater Tot. That is her name, Annie Oakley Tater Tot. In 2017, my dog died, my first dog. Her name was Emily. She was a Jack Russell Terrier who had been beaten by her first owner. And, you know, she was my, you know, clammed onto my heart. And she died at the same time that I had to sell my first house because of a neighbor who threatened to sue me. That's a much longer story we're not going to get into. It was just very bad. I had to go. She caused damage to my house and wanted to sue me. It was a whole disaster. Anyway, so my dog died. I sold my house. I had nowhere to go. So I said, I'm going everywhere. And went on a road trip to see the states I hadn't been to yet. I wanted to see all 50 states. And I had already been to Alaska. I flew to Hawaii out of Las Vegas. And when I was in Boise, Idaho, where my college roommate lives, I decided, well, I should start thinking about getting another dog. And she's like, well, let's just go look, just to get used to the process and seeing dogs and meeting dogs. And I walked out with this dog. And then I drove her back to New Jersey. And my mom said, well, what if she doesn't like the car? I said, oh, well, we're going to figure it out. And she just sat there for however many days it took me to get home. She is a now 6-year-old woodland creature I stole from the forest. She's a very strange looking dog. She's mostly a cattle dog with some other things, including Yorkie thrown in. But she's just like 35 pounds of like mush. And she's a great runner. She hates running with me on leash, which I understand. I wouldn't want that either. But when we go to places where she can be off leash, typically we go to Colorado in the summer, not last year, obviously. She runs off leash and it's just like the best part of her life. Mm-hmm. Annie Oakley Tater Tot. Annie Oakley because she's a Western dog, and Tater Tot because she's from Idaho.
So that's your favorite running companion, I'll bet.
Yeah. There's a wooded dog park here we go to, and she can run off leash there. And it's just like, we run on the beach too in the winter. She's just like, her best days are days that we get to do that.
That's great.
So what costume should I wear for the Dopey Challenge in 2022?
Well, that's a good thing. And Weston will have some explanation too, because his wife is Carissa, who is the lead female announcer for the Run Disney series. But and they really do embrace costumes and so forth.
Oh, yeah. I wrote a story about someone who did the challenge in costume. I was fascinated by the process of her costuming, because she's actually a Disney animator now. That's what she does now. Okay, she was an animator on – she wasn't then. She wanted to be. But she is – like, she's lifelong goal. She now works at Disney, and she was a animator on the movie that just came out, Raya.
Oh, yeah.
But her Mary Poppins costume was just fantastic. I did the virtual 5K series this summer because I wanted the medals for my nephews. I have a younger nephew who loves walking around with a medal on. Kids,
that's neat.
Toddlers.
Yeah, good way to bring the kids into it.
Yeah.
One bit of advice. I ran the first five of the Dopeys. And the one bit of advice is, make your costumes a lot lighter as the distance increases, so that the marathon should be maybe a cape or something like that.
Well, as someone who went to college in Florida, I know that time of year can be really hot or really cold. So I actually have been talking with my mom, who used to make my Halloween costumes, of things we could do that could go either way. So,
and that's good.
And no wigs. No wigs.
Yeah, that's a smart move there. Well, I will tell you, from having run every one of the Disney marathons, that there are a lot more hot days than there are cold days.
Yeah. The gal who ran as Mary Poppins, it was one of the cold years, and she almost got yanked for hypothermia. It's like, well, use your Mary Poppins magic to...
Yeah, you just never know. It's
I know. I was in Daytona Beach in 2017, and my first day there, it was 26 degrees. So
yeah, it can be. Yeah, we know that. You know, the bottom line is we will just have to wait and see how things are going to be configured under the new setup. And I know it won't be as open at the expo as it normally is, but we normally have a booth there. If we are able to interact for that weekend, because I guarantee that if it's open, I will be there running the marathon.
Yeah.
But if it's possible at the expo, come by. I'd love to see you and get an update.
I mean, I had been hoping that, sort of thinking about long-term running plans, that I was thinking about having done it this year, obviously. But I think there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand for these events, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Are there any other interesting challenges that you want to take on, like Dopey?
No. I would like to do a relay. Like, I've done a relay that we have here in New Jersey, which starts in Cape May and goes to Margate, I think. That was fun. I got asked to be, I'm the person who always gets the call. Somebody dropped out of our Ragnar team, and, you know, once it was for the Florida Keys, and I had already had a trip planned to Florida for like a week later, and it wasn't possible to do both. I would probably take another crack at a 24-hour race. I don't know if I would do one in the woods. The one that I did was in a town park, a 1 mile loop. I think I learned from what I did. And it's funny because I wrote a story about it, which was sort of like first time trying this. And some of the comments were like, well, here's all you did wrong. And I'm like, I said it wasn't going to be perfect. Hush.
but
we'll see.
Yeah.
That's one of the things about running. First of all, there are no guarantees about any running race or an individual run. And you can learn something. And you learn more from the things that go wrong.
Yep, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jen.
Well, thank you too, both. All right, bye.
Started in the eighth grade, running with some friends of mine. Joked and told good stories, wasn't all about finishing time. It took me off to college, building friends along the way, running. Forever young.